all. I just want you to know that we always have record attendance when we have guest speakers.
That doesn't hurt me at all. No, really glad that you're here. If it's your first time, I realize I want to welcome you. Maybe for some of you, you're starting a new year off right, and you decide, okay, we need to get right with God, and this is the year maybe we need to find a church, and you're here, in your home, and it's going to be awesome. Sometime during the service, if you have a little time, you can fill out the connection card that's in the seat, and just let them know who you are and that you were here, and if you take that to the information station at the end of the service, we have a free gift for you, and just can answer questions about who we are. Upcoming, we have Discover and Realize, it's our membership class in a couple weeks. You're not currently a member, you don't know enough about Real Life yet, so if you want, you can check out Discover Real Life in a couple weeks on January 23rd. Sign up for that either online or in Milwaukee. I want to give a shout out. We got some people today in the attic. Let's give them a hand. They're up there. Love you guys. And last night we actually had, this room was completely full, the attic was completely full, and everybody was watching around TV in the lobby, so we were pretty packed. It's pretty awesome, and it's a good reason, because today we have Don Piper here. Don is an amazing guy with an amazing story, and actually has more than one story, because I've been talking with him all weekend. He has a lot of stories. Really awesome guy. I mean, this is the guy that, if you're not familiar with his book, 90 Minutes in Heaven, he is going to share his testimony here today. It's profound and it's powerful. I first got the book because my mom read it, and she said, you got to read this book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. And I'm one of those guys that you got to do more than tell me I got to read a book, you know what I mean? And then so she gave it to my wife, and my wife read the book, and she said, babe, you got to read the book. When you got your wife and your mother telling you got to read a book, you got to read a book. So, finally started reading the book, and I was like, this is life-changing stuff. And it changed the way I believe heaven, changed some of my preaching, and we even did a series this year on heaven, because it's the thing that seems to be missing for most Christians is this understanding of heaven. Well, Don's here to share today because he was dead. He spent 90 minutes in the presence of the Lord, pronounced dead, came back. It's going to be an amazing testimony. And he also, through this testimony that God has given him, as he shared it, he wrote it down, and his book sold over 5 million copies, New York Times bestseller for a long time. It's an amazing thing, translated in 40 different languages. Last year, he spoke in 15 different countries, and I spoke in Claremont, Mineola. I think I did a thing over in Goldenrod. Anyway, I get around to it, all right? So, without any further ado, you know, back from the grave and here from Houston is our friend Don Piper. Let's welcome him.
I've spoken in Kissimmee too. How are you today?
Great.
It's good to see you. Honored to be here at Real Church, Real Life Church. And delighted that you're here too. Thank you for coming. Those of you who are watching other places, we're glad you're here too. You're actually probably a more attractive group than this one. You know, some folks didn't get in here, so we're glad all of you are here, no matter where you are. And thanks for being here. Hey, if you don't have a church family, live in this area, let me recommend this one. I've just been here for a couple of days, but wow, good things are happening here in this church. It's just awesome. They do this every week here. So come back when I'm not here and hear Justin speak. What a great guy he is. And awesome staff that you have here. God is really doing something special at this church. I am honored to be here today. And what I've been asked to do today is kind of share a testimony, really. I like testimonies. I think we ought to do them more than we do. You say, what is a testimony? Is that legal? Well, it can be a legal expression, but really it kind of comes from the root word of sharing your story, whatever happened to you. And so that's what I'm going to do. And if you have a personal relationship with Christ, you have a story. Now, you may not have written a book, you might not have done this, or, hey, let me tell you something. My daughter called a few weeks ago, and she said, you're not going to believe this. I said, what? She said, you were on Jeopardy. I said, I've never been on Jeopardy. I said, probably couldn't get on Jeopardy, but I said, I've never been. She says, no, you're on Jeopardy. I said, what are you talking about? She said, somebody called me from another state, and she said, they saw your name on Jeopardy. I said, no. So I looked it up then, you know, trying to find an episode of Jeopardy and found it. We watched it, And there was about a third of the way to the show, you know, Alex Trebek asked the next contestant to, you know, pick a column or you know, one of the questions. And so he picked it, and it was like, Don Piper spent 90 minutes in this place. And the guy buzzed in and said, what is heaven? And like won $600. So my life is a question on Jeopardy. I'm not sure that's a good thing. But, you know, your life may not be a question on Jeopardy, but your testimony may be the very one someone else needs to hear. You know, the right one at the right time. So let me encourage you as I share mine to share yours. Because yours just really might be the one that God will use to bring somebody to know Christ. So I'm going to share this one that is contained in this book that he mentioned. It's called 90 Minutes in Heaven, and I wrote the book so I would never have to talk about it.
Really good book.
That has not gone well. Because people seem to want to hear about it from a guy who experienced it. It spawned a couple of other books. One is a devotional book, cleverly titled Daily Devotion. And it's really 90 stories that I collected from people who read this book and shared their story with me. And there's Bible verses and stuff in there for every day, one a day for 3 months.
If you're selling this
and
book.
Then, no, incidentally, there's a children's version
here
in
this book,
too. So some of the things that we're talking about today are just a little heavy for kids.
So we
wrote a verse just for them. It's very kid-friendly. And then the last book that I've released is called Heaven is Real, Lessons on Earthly Joy. And I wanted to write this book, I really wanted to write this book for like people who are going through difficult times. We don't have anybody like that
right
this morning here, I'm sure. But, you know, if you live long enough, you will. And I got hit by a truck. It was a horrible nightmare for me and all the people who loved me. And I really had to figure out how to get past that. And maybe that's kind of where you are today. You're trying to figure out how to get past whatever it is that you're going through. You're in the middle of a long, dark night. And so this book is about that. Heaven is Real, Lessons on Earthly Joy. I think if you know where you're going, you should probably be having a better trip on the way. And that's what this is about. And then there's a new book that is not released. It'll come out March the 1st nationwide, and you'll be... It's not a paperback, but this is a paperback pre-release edition of it called Getting to Heaven, Departing Instructions for Your Life Now. And this book is John chapter 13 through 17, and what it is it's instructions on how to live until you're called home. I don't know if you know this or not, but we don't get out of this alive. You knew that, didn't you? I mean, the death rate here on earth is 100%. So how are you living your life? This is an instruction book for that. Straight from the words of Christ, departing instructions for your life now. So that'll be out March the 1st. Anybody been to a wedding recently? Anybody? They don't have weddings in Florida? I know they do. Okay. If you've been to a wedding, you know how this works in a typical wedding, anyway. The officiants, whoever's doing the service, will kind of walk out here to the center of the stage, usually. And they'll be in position when the groom walks in. And the groom often will walk in from the side, accompanied by the groomettes, and they'll come and stand over here and face the audience. You know, so they're looking out at the audience. And then at designated times, some really nice ladies will walk down the aisle wearing dresses, don't ever wear a band, and they'll come here. And then at the really pinnacle of the service, the doors will open, and often on the arm of her father, the bride will walk in. And of course, there's a dramatic difference between the bride and the groom, other than just the way they're dressed. When the groom walks in, usually he's accompanied by these words. Is that him? But you know what happens when the bride walks in? Very different, isn't it? I mean, people stand up, they turn around, they face her. There's a great hush that goes over the crowd. It's a very special moment because they come from thousands of miles in some cases to see her dress. And so they're looking at that now. And she's coming down the aisle. But no one is looking at her like the groom. He's really fired up. Now, his knees are probably shaken and he's very nervous, but he's excited about the prospect. This is his lifetime companion. She is a great gift from God, without a doubt. So he's very excited about seeing her. With that in mind, listen to these verses from the Revelation number 21. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city. If you read the Bible, you'll find out that every time it talks about heaven, it talks about it in concrete terms. In this particular case, it refers to heaven as a city, a holy city. Other places in the Bible, it calls it a kingdom, which would be the same thing in Bible terms, a kingdom, a place that's kind of walled off and it's where the king lives. And in other places, it's just referred to as the place. And that sounds kind of ordinary, but it's not. When Jesus says, I go to prepare a place for you, it's important that you understand he is a real place, like more real than this. You say, well, how could you get more real than this? This is a beautiful facility. Well, it is a beautiful facility, but one day it won't be here. And neither will you. But the place that Jesus prepares is forever. It never goes away. And so it's a real place. I go prepare a holy city. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. Now listen to this. Prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. Now with that in mind, consider this. Here's the groom looking down the aisle at his bride coming down. He's so excited and so thrilled and so overwhelmed. Are you? What do you think about heaven? Probably not. I mean, the truth is, we don't think about heaven at all until we're going to die or somebody else dies. It's just not something we're preoccupied with. We're so busy living a life here, we don't really think about where we're going. Well, how do you know where you're going if you're so focused on this? Well, we're taking reservations in heaven this morning. You know, our prayer is that you won't leave here without being ready to go to heaven because, you know, your life can end at any moment. Any moment. You say, well, you're trying to scare me now. No, I found out the hard way. Your life can end at any moment. Now, further down in these verses, it talks about a description of heaven, and I'm going to give you one before we leave here this morning. We got to Mexico 22 years. I got in my car on Tuesday morning, and I was headed to church. January 19th, 1989. I've been in a conference for about 3 days with about 200 ministers, pastors, and the conference ended there in East Texas, and we got in our cars and we headed back to our respective places of service. Mine was about 130 miles away, south of Houston. So I drove out to the conference center gates and I made a decision to go home by a different pathway. I had come from the conference center from the east. I decided to go home by going west that way. You could go home either way, but I made a conscious decision to try something new. I'm kind of a curious person by nature. Maybe you are too. You like to see and do new things. And actually, that may be why you're here today and realize you heard they had a dead guy down at the church and you want to go see him. I think that's a good reason to go to church. Curiosity is a great reason to come to church because they answer life's important questions every week in this place right here. So I turned to the right out of curiosity. If you do that, you have to cross a lake like one of these out here. And it's a long, elevated highway, and the end of it is an old bridge, very narrow, metal superstructure over the top of it. This bridge was built back in the 1930s, and it was dedicated to the men and women who served in World War I. That's how old this bridge is. Not used anymore, but it still sits out there because it's a memorial. Well, I'm driving across the bridge because it was the only way to get across that lake back in those days. And I'm looking at the bridge, and instead I'm thinking, wow, this is really old. I'm about 30 feet from the end of the bridge. It's about 35 degrees, and it's raining. Kind of a miserable day, really. But I'm not worried about that. I've got a stack of sermons on the seat beside me. I've got a new sermon series to begin the following Sunday morning. It's the beginning of a new year, and I'm focused about that and excited about the possibilities. And so here I am on my way to church. And I'm focused on leading a Bible study. And suddenly, coming in the opposite direction is an 18-wheeler. Now, he crests a hill. He's unfamiliar with the area, and he has to go downhill to get on this bridge. I've got to go uphill when I exit the bridge. So he's driving far over the speed limit. And he says when he went over the hill, he looked down and saw a slow-moving car down there and knew that he better do something fast because he was going to run into that car. There was not enough space left to stop the truck. So he decides to go around the car. When he did, he hit me head-on right on the end of that bridge. Horrible collision. The truck actually went over the top of my car. Just crushed it. shoved it up against the railing of the bridge. He went over me and then struck two more cars, including the one he was trying to miss. So it was a four-car pileup on the Trinity River Bridge. Very isolated rural area. Took a long time for help to arrive. Eventually, it did, and they began to work the accident. And the news wasn't too bad to start with. They examined the truck driver, they examined the driver of the other two cars, and they discovered that they weren't too badly hurt. And in fact, they treated them and released them from the scene. The four paramedics who came out to the site, because there were four vehicles, left those people and all began to work on me, because it was obvious I was not okay. In fact, they did everything they could to try to resuscitate me, try to revive me, try to bring me back. They were unsuccessful. I was pronounced dead on the scene, which I think brings up an interesting question. If I was dead on the scene, what am I doing in Claremont? Let me ask you the same question. But I want to ask it in a different way. What are you doing in Claremont? I mean, what are you doing in Florida? What are you doing here that matters at all? We'll answer that question before we leave today. We covered up the body so nobody would have to see it, because it was gruesome. You can imagine, there was a bloodbath in this car. I've been actually torn apart. And so they're waiting now for a coroner to come to the scene, because you have to do some paperwork in the Amazon Valley. You have to do an investigation. So they're waiting for that person, which means they can't move me, which means the traffic begins to back up for miles in both directions on both ends of the bridge. It's the only way to get across this lake. Behind me are probably at least 150 preachers. They're all trying to get to their churches to lead Wednesday night services all over the state of Texas. They're not going anywhere now. At least one of them, maybe more, but one of them left his car. He and his wife, who had both spoken at the conference we attended, came up to the bridge. They found the policeman in charge, and Pastor Dick Honorecker says to the policeman, "I see there's been a horrible accident here. I am a pastor. Is there anybody I can pray for? I'd like to pray for somebody, victims." And the policeman said, "There's no one to pray for. Everyone else is okay, and the man in the red car over there, he's dead. He didn't make it." And when he said that, God spoke directly to this pastor. I think God's doing a lot more speaking than we are listening. But that day, he was speaking, and this guy was listening, because here's what God said: "Pray for the man in the red car." Well, that didn't make any sense to him. He never thought about praying for a dead man. But he knew that God was talking to him. So he was obedient. He didn't wait until he understood it. He just did what God told him to do. If you waited until you only did things you understood, you might not do much. So he just did it. He said to the policeman, "I need to pray for the man in the red car." The policeman said, "Did you hear what I said? He didn't make it. He's dead. We covered him up." "Well, that may be, but God's told him to pray for him." "All right, go ahead and pray for him, sir." No, I need to get in the car and pray for him. I want to put my hand on him and pray for him." "Can't do that. I mean, look at the car. You could get hurt just getting near the car. If you want to pray, you'll have to do it over here." "No, sir, I have to put my hand on him and pray for him." And they got a little discussion about whether that was a good idea or not. And finally, the policeman says, "You seem very sincere, Pastor, but truth is, you don't want to see what it looks like under that tarp. He is a bloodbath." "You don't understand either, officer. I was in the medical profession before I went into ministry. I've seen a lot worse than that. That's not going to bother me. I've got to get in there because God's told me to do it." Well, the policeman relents. The guard record goes over to the car, comes in from the rear of the car, because he certainly can't come in from the front or the side, and he lifts up the tarp and he begins to examine me. When he does, he discovers that the only thing I did not break in the accident is this arm. This is the only thing I did not break, my right arm. My son, Chris, is with me. He's out at the book signing table. Chris says the reason I didn't break my right arm is so I could sign books, but I don't think that's true. So Dick Honorecker reaches, he's under the tarp now with the dead body. He reaches around and he puts his hand on my right shoulder between the two seats, the front seats, and he begins to pray for me in the dark. Even though it's the middle of the day, he's now covered up with this body. He's praying because God told him to do so. He's not the only one praying. At this time, of course they searched me to try to find out who I was, and they discovered who I was and where I was from. They called my home, which was in Friendswood, south of Houston, and they tried to get in touch with my wife. Well, she wasn't there. She was at school. She taught school until last year. She retired after 34 years as an elementary school teacher. She is the hero of the story, not me. See, she's the one who emptied the bedpans, took care of three children, graded papers every night, slept on a cot beside me. She's the one who overcame this story. I just survived. So she was at school, and our children were at school, and so they called my church because they found my card, my business card, my wallet, and decided that was where I might be headed. They were right. And they did tell the church that I had been in a terrible accident, but they didn't tell them I was dead because they hadn't told my family yet. So that's the natural order of things. So they asked the church if they would get my family and bring them there, which is, of course, what they did. But in the meantime, the church did the only thing they could think of. They started praying too, like Dick Hornerager, the coroner. And they're praying, and they're calling other churches and asking them to pray. And this prayer chain, if you will, began to spread around that area in the neighboring states and from coast to coast. In a very short period of time, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, most of whom I'd never met, were praying for me, even though they didn't know who I was. They were praying that I would be okay. They didn't know I was already dead. So these prayers are being lifted up to the throne of God. They're petitioning God for my survival, that I'll be okay, that I'll have some kind of meaningful life, even though I've been tragically hurt in an automobile accident, even killed. And so they're praying and praying and praying. They don't know I'm already dead. One man knows this. It's Dick Hornerager. He's in the car. And he's praying verbal prayers, but he's also praying musical prayers. You know what those are? Hymns. I mean, those are prayers put to music. And he's singing in between his verbal prayers great old hymns, including this one, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. This is a great song, about 150 years old. And he's holding on my shoulder and he's singing What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And he's singing it about 1:15 p.m. The accident happened at 11:45 a.m. 90 minutes now have passed since the truck hit me and killed me. Dick Hornerager's holding onto my right shoulder. He's singing this song, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And suddenly, without any warning, there under the tarp, in the dark, I started singing that song with him. He got out of the car very quickly. With him? He ran over to the policeman and he said something really preposterous. He said, Officer, the dead man is singing. Nobody believed him. Because it's not believable, and he had to do some serious convincing to get them to come and check on me, which of course they eventually did. They did discover I was alive, kind of, and so then they had to figure out how to get me out of there, which was very difficult, removing a living person from a wreck like that. And so equipment that was not on site had to be ordered from 35 miles away. It eventually was delivered, and they began to dismantle this car, take it apart, take the roof off of it, and get as much as me as they could out of the car, put me on a gurney, and take me to a series of hospitals. You say, a series? Yes, because none of them could help me, not the condition I was in. I finally went out of the regional hospital about 35 miles away. There, they determined I needed to be life-flighted by helicopter to an area, to the nearest level 1 trauma center. That was in Houston, 85 miles away. But helicopters couldn't fly that day. The weather was too bad. So I was put in an ambulance and driven down Interstate 45 between Huntsville and Houston. That accident happened within 45. I told you that. I arrived at the Memorial Hermann Hospital in Houston at 6:15 p.m. that night, 6.5 hours after the truck hit me and killed me. And from that night forward, I would be in the hospital for 13 months. I would have 34 major operations to try to reassemble me from head to toe. So a couple of things emerged immediately, which I think are very important to share this morning, and I want to talk about them briefly. The first thing is, I do believe that God answers prayer. And number two, I believe that God is still in the miracle business today. And the reason those are important is because you should be doing the first one and believe in the second. You see, God wants to hear from his children. We were created for fellowship with God. And that means he wants to talk to us. He wants us to talk to him. That's why we were made. And so often we fail to do that. He just wants to hear from his children. If you look over at the little book of James, and it's just a very rich book, there's a question in there for anybody who thinks the Bible is not relevant anymore in the 21st century. How about this first question? It's in James chapter 5. Is any one of you in trouble? That's what it says. Well, you know, you're in trouble. Many of you are troubled by something like that. You know what the next sentence is? Then he should pray. See, God wants to hear from us about the things that we're going through. My dad is 85 years old. He fought in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. He lives in something called a War Heroes Home. He deserves to be in that place. He earned it. He has the medals to show for his service. During this long convalescence, during these surgeries, there was one time, he saw me many times, but there was one time the two of us were just there together, alone. And my dad, who was in his 60s at that time, with a very gnarled, arthritic hand, walked over to the bed where I was lying, and he took my hand, and he leaned down, and my father said to me, "Son, I would give anything to trade places with you." That's my dad. He loves me. I'm his little boy. I will always be his little boy. And if he loves me that much, how much more does God the Father love me in heaven? You see, I can't be anywhere near my dad without stopping to see him. It would hurt his feelings if I didn't visit him. And God feels the same way. He wants to hear from me. Sometimes the answer to our prayers is yes. Sometimes the answer to our prayers, no. Sometimes it's a better answer than the one you're looking for. Sometimes it's not the time you think you need it, because he knows a better time. But God is faithful to answer our prayers. We have not because we ask not. These people pleaded with God, and they prayed, and they were on their knees, and they were on their faces. One of the best things that happened as a result of my accident is a lot of people who hadn't prayed in a long time started praying that day, and they're still praying because they know it works. I want to encourage you to pray. God wants to hear from you. Let me ask you a question. This is a powerful question, and I want you to listen very closely. What do you suppose would happen in this part of Florida if just the people in this room right now, just they're seated in this church, wherever you are, what if you decided to pray for people who are not ready to go to heaven with the kind of passion that preacher did over my dead body in the car? Let me suggest that if you decided to do that, a revival would take place in Florida. Why not Florida? Why not now? Start with prayer. I'm calling you to prayer. I may not look like much, but I am an answer to prayer. I have nothing to do with my survival. Now, I believe in miracles. You know, some people, again, think the Bible is no longer relevant in the sense that all these miracles happen in the Bible and they're not anymore. I think God's doing some of his best stuff now. I see it all the time. I've stood in too many hospital corridors and had a doctor come out and say to the family, "We don't understand this. I mean, we have the test. The cancer was there, and we're getting ready to operate, and we can't find it now." Well, that's what everybody's praying for, isn't it? I've just been around too many situations for which there was no earthly explanation. I had brain damage when the truck ran over the top of me. It crushed my head. I had blood coming out of my ears and eyes and nose. I had massive brain damage. I was impaled on the steering wheel, so I had internal injuries. Both of those are life-threatening. And were I to have lived, I could still have been vegetated. But Dick Onerecker, the man who prayed for me in the car, was in the medical profession before he was in the ministry, and that's what he was praying for in the car. After the hospital where they originally diagnosed those sent the tests, when I arrived in Houston, I didn't have it anymore. That's what Dick was praying for in the car. He knew what to pray for. That's what he was praying for. I lost my legs were crushed. When the truck ran over the hood of the car, the dashboard just sat on my leg. My right leg was broken at the knee, so that my knee no longer went the direction it was designed. It went the opposite direction. It hit right above my left knee about an inch. When it hit right above my left knee about an inch, it just severed my left leg. 4 inches of femur, that's the largest bone in the human body, was ejected from the car and never found. Must have went into the lake, because that part of my leg is only connected by some tissue on the bottom. The rest is lying on the floor of the car. I put my arm up, and the truck is coming for me. When I did, the truck just took it with it back into the back seat of the car, and from here forward was lying on the back seat of the car, this part of my arm. The car director had to reach around this part of my arm to put his hand on my right shoulder. They told me I would never walk again. my right leg was broken too. Of course, I was just completely demolished. I would never walk again. They said if they were able to reattach this arm, it wouldn't be useful. It would just hang by my side, and I'd have to pick it up and put it down. But I guess you noticed after the pastor introduced me today, I walked out here on the stage, and I'm walking on my own two legs, and this is my arm. You know why? The reason is because God's still in the miracle business. That's why. The reason that should matter to you is because you may need one someday. Let me say this without reservation. If God can resuscitate a dead man in a red car, He can put a marriage back together again. He can help you overcome an addiction. He can help you make peace with your past. He can help you endure the biggest financial disaster you've ever been through. He can help you overcome the hurricanes of life. He can do anything. He is God, and He's still in the miracle business. I think He's doing some of the best stuff He's ever done. Again, I may not look like much, but I am a miracle. I was killed by a truck. I lost my leg. I lost my arm. So I believe in miracles. I want to encourage you in that regard. Don't give up. God is listening. God responds. God is in the miracle business. Whatever it is you're going through, I know He can help you through to the other side. Now, I would be less than honest if I didn't tell you I had a tough time getting through this. It was tough. If you've read the book, you know I'm not a hero in any way. I really struggled with this. I really went through a long, dark night. I'm lying in a hospital bed. 6 days after the accident, I developed double pneumonia. My wife is brought in and was told, "Miss Piper, your husband has pneumonia. We saved him from the accident, but we don't think we can save him from this. There's an outside chance if we amputate everything, we may be able to sit him up and give him breathing treatments, and he may be able to overcome the pneumonia, but we don't think so." There's a new technology that's just been imported from the Soviet Union that involves putting stainless steel halos around arms and legs, and wires and rods will penetrate the flesh and bone and go out the other side. They will hold the bones in place from the outside as if they were connected on the inside, which they aren't. We would have to break his leg in another place, and then we would turn screws 4 times a day and try to stretch the bones in inside, but eventually hope that they would join again. Now, we can transplant bones into his arm because there are other bones in the body that small. And they did. They harvested bones from my right pelvis, the hip, and they put the bones in here. All the bones in here came from here. They decided to take the skin off my right leg because there was no skin left on this arm. They took the skin off this leg and put it on this arm. Medical people have a wonderful knack for finding things you did not hurt and hurt that for you to fix the other side. So that's what they did. But Mrs. Piper, we got to know, do you want to try this experiment? We're flying all the stuff in from Atlanta right now. What would you have us to do? We have to start the surgery within an hour. She decided to do it, hoping it would buy some time. So I had an Elizaroff, an external fixator, applied to my left leg, the very first person in this country ever to have one on a femur. And then one was put on my arm. I wore this one for 11 months. I wore this one for 8 months. And it was a long, dark night. You see, there was not another human being in this country that I could speak to. That someone could tell me how it was going to turn out. Someone could tell me what to expect, how to feel. And so I deteriorated to a long depression. I lie there in the hospital bed every day, lay there, and I'm just overwhelmed. I'm hurt. I'm lonely. Well, there were lots of people there, but they didn't get it. They didn't understand. No one, including the doctors, could say, "Here's how this is going to turn out, Don." They didn't know either. So I just hit the bottom. There's one good thing that can happen when you hit the bottom. You can push off. And one morning about 3 a.m., I decided I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I cried out to God, "God, why? Why? Why is this happening to me? I was on my way to church to lead a Bible study. Why, God, why?" Right on the threshold of bitter. "God, why?" And He spoke to me that night through some music I was listening to, and this is what He said in so many words. "Don, you're looking at this all wrong. This is not about you. This is about what I can do through you to help other people. Because now you'll understand better than you ever have what it's like to go through this. You'll be able to hold someone else's hand and say, 'I understand how you feel.' They'll be able to see you walk and know that there's hope in the future." Wow, that just connected with me. I mean, it just hit me. I really was very convicted. I have been looking at this all along. I'm knocked down, but I don't have to be knocked out. I've got to turn my test into a testimony. I need to take my mess and turn it into a message. I need to take the pain and make a purpose of it. You know what? I suggest you can do the same thing. Yeah, you can do that. You may be here, you lost your husband, you lost your job, you lost your daughter. I mean, whatever it is that you're going through. Maybe somebody did do something to you a long time ago and you've never gotten over it. And you're really struggling with it. Well, let me suggest this. You can take the tragedy and turn it into a triumph if you'll let God use you to bless other people. I was speaking in a church north of Houston called Fellowship of the Woodlands. And I was sitting down at a table like this doing a book signing and people were lined out in between services. Like I will after the service, and I'm signing books, and this line is long, and they're very loud, and suddenly this whole line of people got very quiet, which is rare, and this is a roped-off area, nobody's supposed to be behind me, and I realized that they were all looking around me at something behind me, and I thought, what's going on behind me? And I looked around just in time to see 17-year-old Travis walking towards me with his entire family behind him. Because you know, Travis is not walking normally, because Travis is wearing an external fixator on his left leg and he's dragging it behind him. I got off my stool and I began to move in his direction. That young man threw his arms around me, tears just streaming down my jacket. And here's what Travis said into my ear. I read your book and I heard you were going to be here and I had to come and see you. I need to talk to somebody who understands how I feel. And we did. In fact, 2 weeks later, I spent the whole day in his house. He said this, God sent you here. You know what? Travis has got that thing off now. He's in therapy. I'm not sure he'll ever pitch again. He's a high school baseball pitcher. I do know this, though. Travis is going to be able to help other people in ways he never could before he hurt his leg so badly. Let me encourage you today. If you're here today and you're doing this to God, you can get angry at him all you want to. It doesn't bother him a bit. He'd rather you be angry than ignore him. God, why? 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 You know what? He can help you turn this into this. Let me help you. I understand him. If you decide to do that, God will help you do what he talks about in 2 Corinthians when he says, he will help you bless others. He will help you minister to others with the same blessing that you have received. May God help you to do that. There are people in this audience today who need to do that. You need to get over being bitter. And today, I've been beaten up, but I'm not beaten. And neither are you. If you'll let God use you. When the big trunk hit me, I was standing at the gates of heaven. Immediately, just like this. I took my last breath here, my first breath there. I am surrounded by people I have known and loved in life who have preceded me in death. And there they were at the gates, my grandfather standing right in front of me. He was one of the most devoted grandfathers I've ever known. I had all brothers in my family, and my dad was in the Army. I told you that, and he was almost always overseas serving Uncle Sam. And my grandfather never left us, though, and he was the kind of man, like my father was, that I wanted to be like him. He was devoted to us. And he was not educated. He couldn't read or write, really. He had grown up there in the Depression, and he worked to just feed his family. But I loved him. He was a carpenter by trade. I thought he was the most brilliant man I've ever known. I still do. He could take lumber and nails and build a place like this. And the night he died, it broke my heart. I adored him. I got a lot of broken bones, but nothing hurts like a broken heart. When Papa died, it hurt. I had seen him in his funeral. There he was in the casket, and he didn't look too good. But when I saw him at the gates of heaven, he looked really, really good. If you want to look really, really good, heaven is where you want to be. He didn't have any scars on him. He didn't have any blemishes. He didn't have any age. It's an ageless place. There is no aging because it's eternal. It goes on forever. No birth and no death. And he looked awesome. I didn't have to be introduced to a single solitary soul at the gates of heaven. I knew them all. And they knew me. You're not going to sneak up in heaven. They know you're coming. And so I'm looking at all these people, and they look marvelous. My grandfather was missing parts of his hands after 50 years of hard labor. But when he reached his hands out to me at the gate and said, "Welcome home, Donnie," in language I never heard before, but I fully understood it, I looked down and saw those hands that had held me when I was a little boy, and for the first time ever, all of his fingers were there. My great-grandmother was standing next to him. She was a victim of osteoporosis. She walked like this in life. She couldn't stand up straight. My great-grandmother was missing her teeth here on Earth. I didn't get to see her very often, even the ones that weren't real. But when I saw her at the gates of heaven, she was standing upright and she smiled at me. I thought she was pretty when she was here in heaven. She was perfect. Most beautiful smile I've ever seen. Over here was a young man that I knew in high school. His name was Mike. He was killed when he was 18 years old. For all the rest of us 18-year-olds to lose someone that age when we never lost anybody before was utterly devastating. I love Mike, and he loved us. We were very close. And the day he died was a devastating day for me. And yet there he was at the gates of heaven. I'm looking at all these people, and wow, they looked good. They were awesome. No scars, no blemishes, no age. You won't have any either. You'll be perfect, just the way God wanted you to be when he made you in the first place, before age and circumstances have taken its toll on you. I look like I fell in a hay baler from the neck down. I got so many scars on me, so many skin grafts. An archaeologist finds me 500 years from now, they don't think they found a missing link. I'm really messed up, but I didn't have any scars on me in heaven. There's only one person in heaven with scars. His name is Jesus. That's to remind the rest of us of how we got there. But you won't have any on you. I reflect back on these people, and I'm trying to think, you know, when I got back, why did these particular people greet me at the gates? I'd only known some of them for months before I died. Why did they greet me? I'll tell you why. They were perfect. You'll be perfect in heaven. They were prepared. What do you mean by that? I mean, everybody else had a reservation in heaven. These people were ready to go. I don't care how good you are. I hope you're good. I don't care what church you belong to, and I hope you belong to one. I can tell you this, that's not going to get you into heaven. You have to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That's the only way you can get in. Jesus said so himself. If you want to go to heaven, you're going to have to go through me, he said. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. No man comes to the Father except through me. So these people knew him. I don't just mean here, I mean here. They knew Christ, and so they were ready to go. Whether they were 18 or 81, they were ready to go. They didn't plan to die that day, but thank God they were ready when they did. I was 38 when the big truck hit me. I was on my way to church. It can happen at any time. You got to be ready. And they were ready. The last thing they had in common was this, and this just blew me away. They all helped me get there. God sent the people to greet me at the gates who helped me get there. They are the ones who have told me about Jesus. They are the ones who lived the Christian life in front of me so I knew what one was. They were the ones who took me to church when I had no other way to go. My next door neighbor was standing over here. She took me to church when I was 9 years old and didn't have any other way to go. She greeted me at the gates of heaven. Mrs. Norris. You say your next door neighbor? Yes, she helped me get there. She deserved to be there. And the powerful question I'm going to leave with you today is, if we greet people at the gates of heaven and we help get there, and we will, who will you greet? I asked you earlier, what are you doing here? That's what we should be doing here. Helping everyone else get there. And I think we have much work to do for them. Everyone can close their eyes right now and think of people who you love here and we want to love there, but we're not sure they're going at all. Bring them to church. Tell them about Jesus. Live a Christian life in front of them so that they'll know what they are. And then one day you can greet them at the gates. What a great reunion that will be. Right over their heads is a magnificent gate. It looks like the inside of an oyster. I thought it was. But you know what? It's a gate, gleaming gate of pearl, mother of pearl, and the light is reflecting off and it makes the gate look alive. I don't think it was alive, but it looked alive, and it's because of the light in heaven. They don't need a sun or moon because God illuminates the place with his glory and his majesty. And you, in heaven, Jesus is called the lamp of God. That's reflecting off the gate. and I'm just dazzled by it. There's a small entrance over the heads of the people who greeted me. I can see through that entrance, and right down the middle of the city is this magnificent street, a boulevard made of gold. He said, that's got to be figurative language. I didn't know how it would be. God can make the streets out of whatever he wants. Gold is the choice. And on both sides, magnificent structures, buildings. I mean, these places are mansions by any standard here on earth. And I know they are, but Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. So I'm looking at the mansions and thinking, oh, awesome, one of those is mine. You know, I like the mansions a lot. But above them is a hill high. It's a pinnacle. It's a hill. And on the top of that hill is a throne. And I'm looking at the throne and I'm thinking, wow, God! Because the bright side of all is coming from that throne. And what I wanted to do at that moment is bypass these people who greeted me, because I knew they'd come in behind me. And I wanted to go through that gate, through that portal, down that street of gold, up that hill, and follow at his feet and say, thank you for letting me be here. But I never got a chance. I didn't move forward, and I'm moving through aromas I've never smelled here. I didn't move through sounds I've never heard here. Angels are everywhere. You can't just hear their voices. You can hear their wings. And then I moved through the music. The music was awesome. Thousands of songs glorifying God. Holy, holy, holy. And yet, in spite of the thousands of songs, they all were performed at the same time. They all fit together. I can close my eyes this morning here in this beautiful church, and I can still hear that music. Honestly, I want you to hear it. And God wants you to hear it. But heaven is a prepared place for prepared. Has there ever been a time when you trusted God with your soul, with your life, to build a better place for you? Well, I'm going to the gates. Suddenly it all stopped. The music stopped. The aroma stopped. Everything drifted away, and I'm in total silence, and I don't know what happened. One moment I'm on my way to church, and I'm going to lead a Bible study. The next moment I'm in the glory and the beauty and the majesty of heaven, and now I'm in darkness and silence, and I don't know what's happening. I cried out, God, what's going on? I just got here. And then I heard a voice, but this time it's not in front of me. It's behind me. It's that preacher in that car singing, what a friend we have, Jesus. Bang. I'm in the hospital bed for 13 months. Flat on my back, day and night. And I can't tell you how often I lay there in that bed and looked up to heaven and said, God, why? I was only trying to serve you. I was on my way to church. Why did you let me see that and take it away from me? My answer today is different than it was that January morning in 1989. I think that happened to me so I could be here today. Say to all of you, to your face, heaven is real. It's real. And Jesus is the way. Has there ever been a time when you made that resolution? I got killed on my way to church. We're taking reservation. Would you pray with me? Lord, thank you for all the souls that are here today. I don't think anybody's here by accident. And I pray today, in our heart of hearts, that you will help us to know those who are ready about the glory and the awesome beauty that awaits us. And for those that are not, that without delay, there's an urgency about this, they'll make themselves ready. Mike, who was 18 when he died, that day wasn't planning to go, but thank God he was ready. Lord, as we come now to a time of communion, I'm reminded of those who gathered at the gates that day to meet me, because heaven is a great communion. It's all of us together with you at your table forever and ever and ever. Until that day, Lord, as we commune here, we want to be part of that family. God, help us to be ready for what happens next. And God, help us be faithful until you call us home one day. May you bless this church and all who serve here. May you bless the family of God that meets here. Lord, I may not meet these people here. There's a lot of them and there's only one of me. But I pray that if I do not meet them here, one day I will see them all there at the gates. We offer this prayer in the name of the one whose building is a better place, Jesus Christ our Lord.